Go ahead, I've got the tape in.
There wasn't too much that they could do otherwise. There was some card playing, I guess, and some shooting crap. Dice,
sure. Yeah. Sir. But as a sergeant, you did... It must have been kind of lonely for you if you...
Well, yes and no. I mean, I had 2-3 guys around me most of the time, too, that for messenger service and the communication sergeant. We were very close all the time. And he was the chief radio man. And he was Italian from New York. And so he was kind of... interpreter too, as well as the chief radio man. But I guess I was quite a bit of business.
Yeah.
But I had been offered during the war, towards the end there, the last couple of months of the war, I guess. We're running short of officers, and I was offered an officer's commission to be a second lieutenant, battlefield promotion they call them.
Right.
And I turned it down for the simple reason that when you're out on the battlefield, they're out in front with their men. And leading the men that it's supposed to be, and I wasn't quite as far out in front, but I had my duties to do too. But I was basically was getting $187 a month, I think, when I got through, and that included combat pay and everything, and the office, and then the food, shelter, and the clothing. Furnish me, whereas officers weren't getting much more than that, and they had to buy their own clothing. So I couldn't see any advantage of sticking my neck out any farther than I was, so I turned it down.
Right. Now, I don't recall, you were in Italy when the war ended, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, where were you when you heard the war was over?
We were right up close to the Austrian border. We had worked our way on up to there was this small town of Mis, M-I-S, where we pulled into. We'd been camped in this one town, and on a Sunday we got orders to move forward, and we were getting things lined up and loading up. And some of the natives come around and said, "Where are you going?" I told them, "Well, we're going after the Germans." And they said, "Well, you don't have to anymore. The war's over." "Well, how do you know it's over?" "Well, nobody told us it's over." "Well, the big shots had met and signed the treaty and the war was over."
Oh, wow.
Well, it didn't. We kept going, we kept going until Tuesday afternoon. Pulled into this small town. It was raining and cold, and of course there wasn't too much battlefield activity going on, so we kind of hauled up there to find out what was going to do next, and the word came down about 4 o'clock in the afternoon on Tuesday that the war was over. I can't recall that there was really a big celebration or anything like that that went on, but everybody was happy. It was over with.
Were you worried that you might be transferred over to the Pacific?
No, not myself. Some of the men probably would be, but under the rotation or discharge regulations after that, those that had most points got to go home first, and you got points for how many months you've been in the service and how many months you've been on the front lines, and then you got 5 points for each one of your decorations, and so you got so many points, and I had ended up as one of the top point holders in our company, I guess. And so that's when I noticed that I was going to go home. But there was afterwards, see, that there was thoughts, I guess, of probably someone might have to go. But the unit itself didn't go, no. They could be shipped out as replacements. But I don't recall that anybody ever did.
Right.
Because of the sea in September when it ended in Japan, wasn't it?
Right. Right. So how long was it between the end of the war in Europe and before you actually left?
The war ended on May 8th. May 8th, I think it was. Well, anyway, from then until I came home, it wasn't too long after that that I got my orders to start going home, and I was transferred out of there to another unit for a while, and then I don't remember which unit that was. But then I went from there to I think it was the 757th Tank Battalion. I was with the tank outfit then for a short while, and then I got transferred to the second quarters headquarters to be shipped home and discharged. And I think I got home on, actually got home on October 19th, I think it was.
And
so I spent a lot of time floating around in between there, yeah.
Right. And what did you do in these other units? Were you just kind of...
Well, I know in the tank units, I served as first sergeant in most every place I went. The tank battalion, I was the first sergeant, and the commander, then the captain, told me one morning to get line the company up and for duty like they usually do. So I went out and I lined the company up like I did in the infantry, and the platoons line up and take a report from the platoon sergeants and give me a report of their old men are present and accounted for. And after that, then we give the command for the officers to take their post. So then the officers would move up to the head of the platoon and take over from the sergeant. And well, I gave them that order and they didn't know what to do. So the captain told me after that, he said, never mind, he said, I'll form the company myself. but with the other units, the second corps there, there's a lot of non-coms and people in there, so there wasn't a lot of duties to do.
So what was the trip home like?
Well, it was pretty good. We sailed out of Leghorn, Italy, and it took 19 days to come home. And I was only seasick one day.
Really?
This is on a smaller ship, what do they call them? It was smaller. There was only 750 that's on the ship anyway. And we had one real bad storm day, and that's when I guess I got a little sick. But otherwise, we were up on deck most of the time and slept out in the hole. But it was pretty good because there wasn't much to do or anything. We just sit up there in the sunlight on the deck.
What did you guys do for recreation on ship?
Nothing.
Nothing?
Play cards, I guess. Some of them were playing cards, yeah. And we got to New York. We landed in New York And there was a band out there, and Pierre was playing and welcomed us home, I guess, and we went there.
And you went down?
I went there once from there, then to Fort Meade, Maryland, yeah.
Down to Maryland.
And we had a big T-bonus meal there. and just hung around for a few days to get transportation and get all the bookwork finished up so get the final pay and all that stuff.
Right.
And then I went from there then into Baltimore. This is my pen pal.
Right. And then it was, would you say, a week before you went back to Minnesota, or?
Pardon?
You were in Baltimore a week before you went back to Minnesota?
Yeah. And then I came back, on the Greyhound bus from Baltimore to Fargo, North Dakota. This is about a 2-day trip.
Yeah.
Straight through. And I got home then from Fargo to Halstead, where my brother and his wife lived, where I was going to stay. So I took another bus to Fargo, and then thinking my brother and his wife and daughter, my younger sister, were living with him, and the two of them were going to meet me at the bus depot. It didn't show up, so I walked down a couple blocks to the garage where he was operating, and he was working on his car. He had car trouble, so they couldn't get over there to meet me. But it was kind of funny in a way, because my little sister then she was 16 then, I guess it was, and I hadn't seen her since she was maybe 13.
Oh, wow.
And I wouldn't probably notice her. Yeah.
And what was the first thing you did when you got back home?
Went to bed.
Went to bed, huh?
Well, I'd been on the bus for 48 hours.
Right.
And some friends of mine, farmer friend, his wife's funeral was that day, and I wanted so bad to go to that funeral, but I just couldn't do it.
Right.
I went to bed.
Right. And what was it like? How did Ada change since you had been gone? Was it substantially different, or was it just like it always was?
The changes?
Yeah, did it change at all because of during the war? Or?
Oh, not a great deal. The only thing that changed was my former home was gone, and I stayed with my brother then at his place. I took a part-time job working there in the head, of course, of the Rural Electric Company.
Right.
And never picked up a bonus check, you might say. When you got out of the service, I think they had to go to the 5220 club. I forget how it was, but it was $52 for 20 weeks or something.
Oh, wow.
That is unemployment.
Yeah.
But I never did take that. I worked enough, so I got more than that while I was working. And then I found the job here in Ada, and moved over here and had a room. So my home was in my room I rented for the next 5 years before I got married.
Right. And how was the adjustment going from military life to civilian life? Was it a big adjustment, or did you just ease right back into it?
Well, it wasn't a great deal, except the fact that you had to get all new clothes. It's kind of so used to wearing them little army clothes that it's kind of hard to get out of them.
Right.
But and clothes was hard to come by. Decent clothes, that is, shirts and pants, stuff like that. There was a shortage of that stuff. But all in all, I guess it's the first while I walking down the street and hear a car backfire, you kind of jump for it to cover. But other than that, it went off pretty smooth.
So, just kind of summing up your military experience, what about the war made the biggest impact on you?
Well, I have to say it, but my wife isn't here, so she can't hear me. But it was probably one of the best things that ever happened to me.
Really? Why is that?
I learned a lot of how to understand people and learn how the other people live and work and what they do, and learned leadership qualities, and I guess it was a better education than I think that I could have gotten in any school.
Oh, sure, sure.
And to come out of it in one whole piece, like I said, we started out at $21 a month, and then it got raised to 50, and then the improvements in ratings. And I had most of my salaries sent by allotment to the home to the bank for my savings account. And when I got out of the army, I'd saved $4,000.
Oh wow, that's pretty good.
And that was unheard of.
Yeah.
By anybody. I know there was another first sergeant in the same grade as I had, a young guy, and he was on the way home and he was playing cards. I didn't play many cards. And he says, I don't know what I'm going to do. I said, what are you going to do? Well, he says, I'm getting out, I'm going home. I said, I ain't got a damn thing. I haven't got any money, no nothing. Well, I saved more money, I guess, when I was there than I did have any other time. But I got it, had enough so I could buy a new car.
What kind of car did you buy?
I bought a Hudson Super 6.
Oh.
They were just fresh on the market after the war, and my brother had ordered one for himself, and it came and he said he didn't want to take it or didn't want it, and so I took it. And otherwise I'd probably have to wait longer yet.
And then one final question, because I noticed this in the letter that you had written with the history. So you said you didn't see Saving Private Ryan. Have you seen any other World War II movies?
I don't watch the war movies very much because they're so fictitious.
Right. Well, that was my question that I was going to ask you, is how do you feel Hollywood does portray World War II? So you think they're pretty fictitious, huh?
Yeah. Well, the best one I ever saw was one of the first scene was one of the first ones I saw, and that was Robert Mitchum in G.I. Joe was the name of the show, and that was about as close to the actual thing that I could have ever seen.
Right.
And I haven't gone to see Private Ryan or any of these shipping of the Titanic or any of those things. I've seen so much of that.
Right. Sure. Sure. Well, is there anything else you want to share? Otherwise, I'm out of questions, but if you've got anything you'd like to share, now would be a great time.
Well, I don't know just what all you want to know.
Anything you want to share? If there's any question that I haven't asked that you would have liked me to have asked.
Well, the first actual battle we get in, I guess we never did finish that out.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The battle for Hill 69.
Uh-huh.
When we went up into the attack the next day, we were in reserve and had been called up, moved up into active support, and we went through this back to this town of Machine Gun Alley, and here we've seen, many GIs killed on the road up there. How they got killed, I don't know. But they were killed, and they laid there on the side of the road just like dominoes. But anyway, we moved up and got up there and got stopped, and the company commander and some of the men went forward and to Hill 69 then, which is the next hill over. And by the time I got up there and I talked to somebody, asking where the captain had gone, and they said they pointed over towards the hill over there. And I says, well, let's go then, because the guys were getting hit and knocked off one after the other there where they were at on the forward slope of this hill. So a couple of guys started following me, but not too many. But as we got down the bottom of this hill, there was a ravine and a creek down there. And I got down there, and they saw that down there. Then they started coming down. And there was a creek running through there. It was about 6 feet wide, or 20 feet wide, I guess it was. About 6 feet deep in some places. We had to cross to get over to Hill 69. And there had been some soil erosion on some of the corners, turns of this creek. And there was some kind of dry spot up under the surface, but it was dry above the water. And there was several of our guys in there that had been hit and was laying in there. And I remember one guy had part of his shoulder knocked off. And poor guy smiled at me when I went by. But there's nothing we could do, because that's the medic's job. Our job is to fight.
Right.
And got through across the creek and up on the side of the hill, and there were some guys that had been there ahead of us, of course, and foxholes and slit trenches. We jumped into those, and they really were pounding us with artillery, and we were there for pretty much 3 days, and there was no communications, no radio communications with anything behind us, and no water rations to get, no rations, and a couple of the guys were kind of brave, and well, one of them didn't have much between his ears, so it didn't make much difference to him, but they went around to this bodies that were around there and took the rations out of their packs and the water and passed it around to the guys who needed it. That's what kept us going for those couple of days until we got relieved. And then one of the officers that used to be with us, he was with another company, came over from Hill 66 to 69 and wanted some help because he was getting better. And so a couple of the officers and some men went along with him back over to Hill 66 and helped them hold their stations over there. And anyway, after we lost several men and several officers on this hill, but rumor has it, well, we were supposed to have gotten 87 replacements while we were there, and we never did get them. They never did get to us. And while we were there, we moved back down to get reorganized, and we took on another 117 replacements to bring us up there. We came off the hill with 65 men, whereas we went in there with between 185 and 200 men.
Wow.
And the men over on Hill 66 come off the hill with 18 men.
Wow.
And they say afterwards that they took 630 GI bodies off of that hill.
Oh, wow.
And we got 118 replacements in the back row, and down behind, we pulled back to get reorganized. And we started back up the road in pursuit. The line had been broken, and there was lots of the rear echelon soldiers standing along the road. They were applauding us as we went by. And in fact, I heard one of the men on there say, "Oh, there's Sergeant Stipe." I heard he was killed. And there he is.
Wow.
More claws broke off.
Wow.
That was one of the toughest battles of the year.
I bet.
The whole war.
I bet it was. Wow. Do you have any other stories you want to share?
Well, we covered Terracina, I guess.
Yeah.
And Rome, we went into Rome. There's another battle that we had, a battle for Castle San Di Romano. It was a castle church, I guess it was, but we had orders to go up there and take that, and as we moved up there, we lost one squad, went out ahead, and got caught and pinned down, and as far as I know, I don't know whether they ever got captured or killed, we heard from them again. And we moved up during the night, and it was another dark night. And while we were stopped for a few minutes, one of the guys come up from the back end of the column to me, and it says, something going on back there. He said, you better come back and see what it is. So I said, okay. So I went back with him to the back of the line there, and you couldn't see nothing, but you could hear him. You could hear these thumbnails hitting the stones on the mountain track there. And there were German squad evidently coming up. And to this day, I don't know whether they had our men with them or whether they didn't. But we didn't dare do anything because it was darn dark. If our men were involved in there, we'd have got them too. So nothing we can do about it. But as we moved forward, then, anyway, by the time we got to the school castle, some of the boys were looking around back in the bushes there, and here they found a couple German tanks, and the guys in the tanks were sleeping, and they captured the soldiers, and the tanks without firing a shot, and then as the day went on, we took up positions around this old castle, and it was real foggy, and you couldn't see a lot very far, and when it did lift up the fog, you could see the German tanks sitting out there, and they were firing direct fire at this our positions, and I was standing in a room on the back side of this little castle, facing where the tanks were, and I stood on a chair and looked up through a transom above the door, and looked out there, and I seen the fog lift. You could see them out there, but anyway, one of them had fired a shot, and it came right under the door, and big slab about the size of your fist, of your hand, flew up on the chair right between my legs, and was smoking. She was hot. Boy, I moved in a hurry. But that was all the times, I guess, that we were in battle. There was one time that I began to think, wondering what I had white on me, in case we had the surrender, because they were sure pounding us, and after a bit they pulled out, and we secured the point there, and we lost several men there on that job, but that was another tough battle.
Right.
And we had.
It sounded like they were all kind of tough. Are you there? Hello?
Hello.
Are you there?
Hello.
Are you there?
Can't hear you.
I can't hear you either. I can just barely hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, now I can.
Okay, yeah, I kind of lost you there for a minute. I can barely hear you, too.
Oh, yeah. Let's see here. Let me check my notes here a little bit. See if there's something. You got a picture there of a company flag, Company K?
Yep.
Yeah, well, there's a little history to that. There's evidently up on the front lines that got lost. And the supply sergeant didn't know what he should do. He said, well, they have to order another one. So we ordered another one, and they got another one, and before the war was over, there he came shortly before he was getting ready to clean house and move out, I guess. He said, well, I found this flag. He said, what should I do with it? I said, well, you give it to me, I'll take care of it. And I took care of it and put it in my duffel bag. So there's very few of them in the country that anyways got to can claim that I went through the war with them.
Wow.
I've got a German Mauser rifle.
Yeah, I saw a picture of you holding that, and I also saw a picture of, let's see,
what's that
here? It's like a German, a couple German pistols and some
binoculars. Yeah, a Luger pistol and an Italian Beretta, and German field glasses.
Wow. That's great.
Well, I don't know of anything else that we've...
Okay. Well, I appreciate...
When we went to... across the Po River. We had trained in every sort of landing gear, crossing water machines that they had. So when we come to the Po River, we was going to go across there in a big ship. Well... We captured, before we got to the San Riviera, we captured some 2,500 prisoners.
Oh, wow.
They couldn't get across because all the bridges were out and everything, and they were tickled pink the war was over because they just marched right down the road to us. And but anyway, when we went across the Po River, we went across in rowboats.
Oh, really?
If there'd been anybody on the other side, they'd have picked us off like ducks. But there wasn't anybody there, so we got across it, and then they would put in the pontoon bridges so the rest of the people and machinery could get across there.
Right. Wow, great.
Yeah, I don't notice anything else here special, but...
Well, I thank you for sharing your stories. I mean, these have been absolutely wonderful, so...
I guess there's one thing I got to note here. When the battle for Terracina, which where we were going to make that beachhead landing and didn't have to, well, anyway, when we got in, we flanked the town, and the top of that hill behind the town, there was just huge rocks up there, and a lot of shelter for we did, but the Germans really had emplacements up there facing the port side of the town. And which they could have really raised havoc with if we would have tried the beachhead landing.
Right.
So we didn't have to do that. And once we got into the town there, some of our soldiers remembered seeing women crawling on their knees up to the church, and up to the altar to give thanks that they'd been liberated.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's great. Especially because they were on the German side early in the war, so.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well?
As far as I know, that's somewhat everything. If anything pops on my mind, I'll drop you a line.
That'd be great. I appreciate you sharing everything that you have, and I'll get all the stuff.